guys, we're back for a new season and episode of Safari Stories.
Season 3,
and we are back in South Africa, so where we left off in season 2.
Wow, actually very full circle, because you... Well, I guess you were in Nelspruit, maybe?
No, the last episode was actually with Bruce in Hoedspruit.
Oh, it was, yeah, so very full circle.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, where are we now?
Well, we're... in Sarah Nurse, who we had a chat with last time, we're in her house on the Olifants River, close to Hoedspruit, which is close to the Kruger National Park. But the reason we've been chatting about the Kalahari or Kalahari, we're with Mike Anderson, who was also on the last season. I think you
VIP safari guide trainer.
thank you very much.
And
VIP part. Yeah, sure, I'll take it.
we've just come back from sort of a week and a half on the road, and I think we're all a little tired after the trip, because it required a lot of driving into a completely different part of the country.
A lot of traveling.
But we are also, I think, incredibly happy with the trip, because for all of us, it was essentially a totally new area. I'd been there years ago, like when I was a kid, so I didn't remember it that well. So it was all kind of fresh for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, we were just speaking now about the area where we were, the Kalahari, within the Kalahari, mm-hmm. and the difference in how it gets its name. But maybe you want to tell us?
Where it gets its name, or what the difference is?
What the difference is.
Yeah, the Kalahari is just...
And where it gets its name.
We just had to Google it, because I was incorrect, yeah. So I don't know if I'm the right person to say it. But the Kalahari is a small portion, like Mike already said, within the greater Kalahari
it's
Basin.
The denoted area, or the demarcated area, of the national park in South Africa, the South African side.
Mm-hmm. And it goes into Botswana as well.
Is it also called the Kalahari?
Yeah, it's the Transfrontier Park.
No,
yeah,
but it's not called...
It's called like Kalahari.
Oh, is it?
It is. It's only Kalahari in South Africa.
Yeah, but I mean, and essentially it is a transfrontier park, so it goes between both the countries. But it's just a small portion of the Kalahari desert, or the desert-like area.
Yeah.
What?
And how did we get there?
We took probably the most magnificent vehicle that has ever existed.
By far the most magnificent vehicle.
What's her name?
Yeah, I don't know if so much female... or male.
What's its name?
Spud. It's its name is Spud, and it's a Toyota Hilux, which Mike and I bought a few years ago, and we've been kidding out there. Hey, look at the male bushbuck there walking down the river.
Oh, yeah.
This thing was making noise earlier.
Was it?
Alarming a couple of times. I don't know, there might have been a leopard or something walking along the ridge there.
Oh, very nice.
Potentially.
Well, that would be pretty cool.
All right, so you got Spud.
Yeah.
And you've been kidding it out.
It doesn't identify with gender at the moment.
Okay. Been kidding it out, which means what?
I mean, well, we put in a drawer system, which is fantastic. It makes things so easy to organize.
Yeah, it made a big difference.
Yeah, a huge difference. We've got a fridge in there. We've got this canopy at the back, which is a cover on the back of the car, which opens up on three sides. So you can access every part of it.
And you can load stuff on top of the canopy.
You can put stuff on top.
And the fridge slides.
The fridge slides out and tilts, so you can easily access things. And we've even got a table that's built into the roof that slides out.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's just phenomenal.
It makes camping a whole lot easier.
Yeah, it almost turns glamping into camping. I mean, camping into glamping.
It does.
Almost.
No, I agree.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a big off-road vehicle, like a big pickup truck that's been converted into something that you can live out of comfortably for a trip.
Yeah.
That's our friend Eve had the exact same kind of car that was kitted out, more so than even ours is, and she went on 2-3 month long trips.
Yeah, I think with the right stuff you could probably do a trip at least 2 weeks without ever having to stop in any sort of town for supplies.
Yeah,
which is cool.
All right, so how did we get there, and what was that journey like?
it was long.
we arrived at the airport in Joburg in the evening, and Mike picked us up. He'd kind of stocked the car up and it was ready for its trip. And then we drove west to the Kalahari, which is in the kind of most northwesterly part of South Africa. We had to stop along the way because the journey is about 1,000 kilometers, so just over 600 miles. And
there's a curfew in place.
And at the moment there is a curfew in South Africa, so you are not allowed to drive...
After 9 p.m.
After 9 p.m.
You're not supposed to be outside of your house after 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Or just for this period, it doesn't always happen like
that. Well, and the sun is also setting at like 5:30 at the moment. So even then, when we landed, it was almost dark, and then we were driving mostly in the dark. So decided to split the journey.
But it was actually amazing because even though our first accommodation option on the road didn't work out, we just called someone and immediately they were like, yes,
yeah,
just pull
really
in
easy.
And sort it out. So
he was so sweet as well. Yeah. And it was interesting. He was saying that we were I suppose Jomi and I were the first international guests he's had since before COVID.
Yeah, I was really
was
happy.
Really, I know, it was really nice to be able to...
What did you call it?
Support him. And
what did you call that place?
A miracle, or a mirage.
What was it?
Mosaic.
I think I kept calling it
the mirage.
No, you called it the miracle. Because literally we luckily found
what,
it.
So what I found
was to
cool.
show how much I enjoyed it.
What I yeah.
They had a heater and a hot shower. That was all I was really looking for.
This is enough about this B&B. what I found really interesting was how the landscape changed. So when you land in Johannesburg at the airport, you're at like 1,800 meters or like just over 5,000 feet.
Yeah, it's high.
And then you drive down, but gradually downhill into this desert area because that's what we haven't really mentioned yet. The Khalakhari and the Kalahari, it's a desert. It's very much a desert. Some of it's semi-desert, but most of it where we went to is desert. And the first thing that triggered my...
Excitement
was... I remember I was napping during the day in the car. I woke up. And I said to Mike, look at that, is that a buffalo weaver nest? And Mike said, no, it's a sociable weaver nest. And this is, like, the sociable weaver is this massive, or it's this
huge
weaver
nest.
Type that lives in these massive
colonies,
communal nesting area. And that to me then meant, okay, geez,
we're in the desert.
And I guess it just got more and more exciting the closer we got to the actual national park.
It changes from hills around like Johannesburg to like this flat land, and even the soil changes. It gets this like red tinge and very fine. Oh man, it's actually so I used to live in Botswana as a kid.
Yeah.
And so I mean I've lived in deserts my whole life. I lived in Australia as well in the desert. But this was my first time to the Kalahari and it was actually spectacular to be in a proper wilderness area driving around and seeing this like, golden grass with this red sand and these dunes where we saw this cool stuff. And I mean, it was so different from my experiences as a kid, you know, growing up in Botswana.
100%. Would you say that's the main difference for you between the Kalahari and other national parks?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to travel a bunch of places, but in South Africa, most of the safaris I've been on have been, you know, fairly bushy, shrubby areas.
Savannah.
So it can be thick or it can be more open, but there's always bushes and shrubs and it's not always easy to see the animals. Whereas when we went to the Kalahari, what struck me was the flatness, the vastness, the openness. I mean,
we were
in these dry river courses, which is where all the life is pulsing at the moment because it's very dry everywhere else. And it was just so nice to be able to drive and just spot things from like just stopping on a crest and use your binoculars and you know.
It's also quite therapeutic driving in that area just because
it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And you can kind of look in one big area and you don't need to focus on too many individual things.
Your eyes focus isn't always like up the tree, down the tree, next tree, up the tree, down
open
the tree. It's just like gazing
just
in the
in.
Distance.
That's every safari every avid safari goer's enthusiastically ambitious eyes that are scanning trees for leopards constantly. When like most of the time or a lot of the time you don't even see them in the tree.
Yeah. And we were camping when we were there, which is an incredible experience, but also comes with its own challenges. What were the temperature challenge for you?
Oh my word, the temperature. It was what was the temperature most days?
-2 to -4
like when we got up.
Yeah.
Which is 25 degrees Fahrenheit for reference. That's really cold.
Yeah.
Jomi, you and I had made some sort of a promise to ourselves that we will wake up and do an exercise or workout before we go on the safari. Because we were leaving quite late.
Before the sun has risen.
Yeah. And then every single morning, we both woke up and we just silently agreed that this was not going to happen.
We didn't even communicate. We were just like hoping that if one person doesn't say anything or hear anything from the other, that means that
it's
not going
happening.
Ahead.
And it did not.
No, and it did not. But what's interesting is that you get these low temperatures in parts of the country for sure. But then during the day, the temperature went, I think on the one day, to 32 degrees Celsius, which is well in the 90s Fahrenheit. So the temperature difference or range during one day is absolutely enormous. So it means you're kind of really dressed for very cold weather in the morning with lots of layers, and you just keep peeling layer after layer after layer.
I mean, I would get out of the tent in the morning and get into the car in my sleeping bag with a change of clothes in my camera bag before midday, because I would be wearing like two pairs of thermal leggings and two pairs of socks and need to.
Well, you were prepared. I actually just kind of wore one set
shorts,
of
I think the whole time. But you know, that temperature, although it's uncomfortable if you're not prepared. If you're prepared, it's fine. But what it made a difference was the animals are active
so much longer
more than they would be in like the low felt or during summer.
Let's talk about some of the animals because
we had incredible sightings, and I think that's in such large part due to the temperature, right? And what you're saying is, they're active for so much longer, so that your window of seeing animals actually moving and doing things is so much wider than it is.
True, yeah.
In other places.
100%.
All right. What was your favorite sighting?
What was my favorite sighting? I think, so we arrived in the afternoon and we went on one like short afternoon drive.
Mm.
And it was quite just introductory. Just getting used to, because it is still different when you get into the national park from when you're driving through the Kalahari area outside the national park. The main difference being that the land is not privately owned and its animals are protected, and there are regulated water sources within the park to ensure that the animals can survive and thrive, right?
Yeah.
Whereas beforehand they would have moved historically into areas where the water occurred naturally. So now you get into the park and you start seeing animals, and the species are not just the vegetation, the species are quite different to the sort of species that you would see on safari in this area that we're in now, in savannah. And you see the likes of gemsbok or oryx, and you see the like of springbok. These are kind of desert adapted antelope. And you also see kind of smaller creatures like ground squirrels.
Yes.
We definitely have to talk about that.
Oh, my word.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a bit. Anyway, the first...
That almost needs an
episode
in itself.
Oh, God, that does. I thought you were talking about the ones in the campsite, not the traumatizing ones.
No, anyway, so like...
That'll be an end of episode bonus story.
Yeah, if you stick it out to the end of the episode, you will hear the story of an extremely strange ground squirrel. The first day that we drove for the whole day, I think... We didn't quite realize that the animals wouldn't be immediately active, but that they would only kind of get active after a couple
as
of hours.
As we thawed, they
as we thawed, they also thawed.
8:39 is when they started to get active.
And we were driving along this kind of dry riverbed system.
With dunes on either
with
side.
With big, tall dunes that have grass growing on them on either side. And there was there was a car parked on the side of the road up ahead. So we thought maybe there's something there. And there was these two cheetahs, probably brothers, or you say a coalition, right?
Yeah.
So they're two cheetahs that spend most of their adult life together, and they, as we got to the siding, they started to get active, and they were really close to the road, so we were able to follow them, and they started walking, and they moved along this dune, at the base of the dune, so quite close to the road, and they were exhibiting all sorts of interesting behavioral things,
so
right?
Cool.
So they were scratching themselves on trees, scent marking,
chewing on branches,
and
climbing up the tree.
Climbing on trees, which is something that cheetahs don't, or at least I know of cheetah cubs that might do that regularly, but certainly adult cheetah don't. Maybe in the Kalahari they do.
Yeah.
But so it was really cool to see these different behavioral traits. And then we got amazing shots, and I think maybe Hadley, some of your photos will be able to show in combination with the podcast. But what also was great was that we had this intimate half an hour to 45 minutes with them, and then they started walking up the dune. And then they'd kind of just disappeared from view over the crest of the dune, and just from start to finish for me that was
and they were active. Well, as soon as we arrived they started getting active
up.
And it was like perfect.
We had the most incredibly intimate time with them, and we got a real snippet of their day, which we also, I don't feel like we disturbed their day whatsoever.
Not at all.
The animals in this area, it's been a protected area for a very long time, so the animals are quite used to the vehicles, and I just really enjoyed that from start to finish, and also to see them on a dune. Amazing.
It was one of those settings also where it ends and we all just kind of sat there in like silence for a second, like holy moly, that was
lots of fist pumping and excitement after
that like
moment.
what did we just see? Like,
well, if that was the only thing we saw that whole day,
oh my god, it would have been perfect.
It's worth it, you know.
That's 100%.
Just, that's what I enjoyed about this trip though, is, and maybe you'll talk about one of the other sightings that we had, but is that the sightings, the days were kind of punctuated by these incredible sightings, and they might not have been as like frequent as a day in Kruger Park sometimes can be, or as like a day at a lodge in the Sabi Sands could
be. Yeah, up or down a river.
But because of the habitat, and because you know there are far, like, there are far less animals in the desert because the desert can't sustain as many animals.
Yeah.
Every time you saw these animals, it was just so special. Anyway, let's move on to you, Mike. What was your
So from the moment we sort of decided that we were going to go to this place, one thing I said was I really wanted to see a male lion in the Kalahari, like a black maned, because the Kalahari is famous for the black maned male lions, right? And was it the last day or the second to last day? I can't remember.
It was our last full day.
Yeah.
We were leaving the next morning.
We went out and we started to see lion tracks. In fact, we'd seen lion tracks much earlier in the day at another place. And we sort of said, oh, they're going in that direction. And this is where it actually came into play, all of us having knowledge about tracks and signs and where to follow them. We started following these tracks and then they zigzagged back and there was a bit of a loop road that went around and we found tracks heading in all these different directions. But slowly we sort of tightened this net of where we were searching.
This little like triangular block.
To this triangle. Yeah. And we circled the block once, this area. And then on the second time past, Jomi actually spotted it in the distance.
But what I remember...
It was crazy.
The process... I love that process. Just kind of everyone was just silent on the vehicle and we would only really talk about what was relevant to us finding the lion.
Well, and Mike is driving, so he's looking at the tracks on the road. Your head's out the left window looking on your side. My head's out the right window looking at the tracks on my side. And it was just this
great
combo of like, oh my God, we're going to find it. Yeah. We're going to find it.
And we said that. We said we are going to find these animals because there was more than one lion. But anyway, we found that male and he was walking... directly, we stopped the car. As soon as we saw the line, we stopped the car and we said, there it is, yes.
Yeah.
I was like so excited.
Yeah.
And then it was just walking and it walked straight
for
about, 200 meters from where it was,
easily.
Straight towards us. So we had this beautiful image of this male lion walking through this golden grass blowing in the wind with the red dunes behind it. And
the color contrast between the lion
so
and the mane and the grass.
And then it walked right in front of the car. I remember actually I took a video with my phone because I was leaning out the car. And then I realized that this lion is actually walking straight towards
me. He's like not even 2 meters from me.
It's a lion, so I should probably be in the car. So I moved back in and it walked right past the side of the car. And I remember the elation, you know, my heartbeat was pumping. And I mean, I see lions regularly. I get the chance to see them all the time. But to see a male lion in the Kalahari with the hint of that black mane there, so big and powerful.
It's made even more special again by the fact that we all know that lion numbers are unfortunately still on the decline.
Massively.
Rather than
especially in that area.
And
the density must be so low.
Exactly. So that having that moment and vehicle positioning there, Mike, was absolutely spot
top
on.
Notch.
Because we were very... I don't know how... Like, it's weird, but these things sometimes happen on safari when it's just right place at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were completely in the right place at the right time and made the right decision.
To stay where we were.
So, yeah. That's something I don't think I'll ever forget that in my whole life. I'm getting emotional.
But
again, it was one of those sightings
where like this lion walks straight past us and then it and goes up over the crest of the dune on our right. And we all just like look at each other like, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what
and also like,
how amazing was that?
It's not a secret that there's other people in the Kalahari with you. And as this lion was walking down this kind of, what is it, a dry riverbed as well?
Yeah.
The valley.
More cars started to show up. It wasn't a huge amount, but there was a bit of a line of cars.
Yeah.
And
like five cars?
Yeah, five or six cars. And I still think that we picked the best spot and got the the best view of them.
We had it walking towards us because everyone else was behind the lion.
So I haven't checked my videos yet. I don't know.
I have seen mine and it's incredible.
You've okay, good. Well, that's
something.
Yeah. Check the vlog.
High expectations.
It'll be
there.
On there.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think I've gotten a few videos as well. Maybe we can post one or two
for
of them in the next few days.
Absolutely.
Had, what stands out for you?
I think for me it was It was our second day and we went out in the afternoon and we had given it a little bit more time because we kind of noticed that
from Mata Mata campsite which
so
is there's three just sorry to interrupt you
please.
But there are three main campsites and there are a variety of other camps and accommodations available, but there are like three public campsites that you can book. They cost very very little money. I think we've paid a total of like the equivalent of $100 for three people to sleep for four nights, so like it works out at like $10 per person ish. And we stayed at Mata Mata for the second and third night,
Which is like further into the
park. You're talking from when we
from
left
Mata
from
Mata,
there.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we were driving along and we saw, I think. think we thought at first, oh, at first we thought it was an aardvark. We just saw like this sloped back in the grass. And you do get aardvark in this area, and it's very dry and it's nice and warm in the winter. So we thought maybe if we were super lucky, we might see an aardvark or an aardwolf or something. But then we saw four more.
It's a herd of aardvark.
All right, we're not that lucky.
Charging through.
Yeah, so it turned out to be a little group of bat-eared foxes, which are very, very cool, cute little animals that do very well in the desert. And they have these enormous ears that they use to like listen for insects and grubs and things underneath the sand or the soil. And it was this group of five of them that was just walking along, and we watched kind of one by one. They would take like 3-4 steps, mm-hmm. stop with one foot up in the air, cock their head, cock it the other direction, and then start digging.
Oh.
And the forage would get whatever they were looking for, take another 3-5 steps, stop, cock, left, right. And we just sat there with this family of the five of them. Like,
it was amazing to be able to watch the intricacies of how they actually mm-hmm. do what they do, because we all know what they do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They use these big ears to, but to actually watch them using their ears like satellites, moving their heads slightly and pausing and then digging, and so it was like such an amazing thing. And also alone, like no one else there.
No one
just
else.
No, exactly.
Watching these animals.
And strange.
And then, no, sorry. Go ahead.
What I found strange was that I do remember from when I was there, when I was like, I don't know, a teenager, having seen bat-eared foxes, and for the first 2 days while we were in the Kalahari, we didn't see any bat-eared foxes, and I thought, well, what's this?
Not even one.
Not zero.
And then five. And we were like, wow, this is so cool. And that kind of made it all the more special.
Yeah.
And then we kept driving, and like
by the end,
5 minutes
20,
later, another family of five. Yeah. We're like, well, that's weird. Another 5 minutes, another family of five or six. And we kind of realized that it seemed to be that it was this like perfect combination of, there had been quite a lot of wind the 2 days previously, and this day there was no wind.
Yeah.
And it was nice and warm in the afternoon, so they'd obviously come out a little bit earlier than they may have normally. And it was just like perfect bat-eared fox conditions.
Yeah.
And I think by the end of our drive, we'd seen like 19 bat-eared foxes in a span of maybe 2 hours, two and a half
incredible.
Hours. I mean, it was completely bizarre. And it's an animal that we got to see quite a lot at Marataba, where we used to work in South Africa. But
not as relaxed.
Not nearly as relaxed. And you didn't get to really see their behavior. Like, to see them...
watch them doing their
digging
things and foraging.
And it just was amazing.
Well, I think that's what you said, because we do... like, what we're doing here on this podcast is we're giving a highlight each, sighting-wise, of what we saw in the Kalahari. But what we do at the end of every day camping in these places, or staying in a lodge even, is we kind of say, what's your highlight of the day?
Mm.
And I think what you said that day was that... what was it? That it's just a new version of the animal's behavior that I've never seen before.
Right. It was getting to see it do something so different to how I normally see the animal act. It normally being quite timid.
Yeah.
And that they were completely relaxed. There were five of them. I've never seen five of them foraging together at once, let alone five times that.
It's the beauty of going on a safari in an area where animals are habituated to the vehicles.
Totally.
They will do what they normally do, so long as you don't do something really bad, rev your engine or race around, then they're going to just do their thing, right?
Yeah.
It's great.
I think, I enjoy going to areas where animals are habituated. I also enjoy going to areas
to
where animals
wild places.
Are not habituated. I think for people who are listening who might be more inclined to come to Africa only a few times in their life, they probably want to go somewhere where they see the animal and it doesn't disappear immediately.
Mm.
So I think it's a great place to visit if you want to see habituated desert adapted species.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think also that's the beauty of going to just new areas, because, you know, at Maratama, the animals were super relaxed around the vehicle, but
some of them.
The bat-eared foxes weren't.
Mm.
And getting to go to an area where bat-eared foxes are very habituated and with such a different landscape in the back, you know, that's the beauty of going to new places. You just see different behaviors that you don't see in other areas. Speaking of different behaviors.
Yes.
Let's
circle back to
the psychotic ground squirrel.
I would like for you, Mike, to just tell us a little bit. We're probably going to talk about another place that we stayed later on in the trip, which is called Tswalu, which is a very nice lodge. We might talk about that on the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a very interesting event that occurred while we were at Tswalu.
Walk us through it.
Very much related to a desert species as well, or certainly an area that occurs in the desert.
So yeah, so this was something that both Joby and I got very excited about. Okay, so the whole thing started out not so pleasant for a specific animal. So this fantastic
person.
Yeah, and also for Hadley. But
I did not enjoy
don't
this.
Don't tell me what's happening. Stop talking about it. Anyway, sorry, we're getting very excited here. So this beautiful, lovely lodge has these big glass windows because you want to look out into the desert. It makes the room feel expansive. It makes you feel like you're part of that. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happens when there's big glass windows is sometimes birds fly into them, which is a really unfortunate event. And they've tried their best to avoid that happening by putting stickers and curtains and all sorts of stuff. But anyway, in any case, it happens sometimes. So I think it was an emerald spotted wood dove.
Or Namaqua dove, I think.
Namaqua dove. Yeah. So it had obviously flown into this window and stunned itself a little bit. It was on the ground sort of like trying to shake it off and figure out what was going on.
I'm freaking out at this point.
Yeah, because you've literally seen it happen.
I had just seen the bird flying towards the window and I was like, oh, no. And then it hit.
Anyway,
and I was like, guys, is it okay? Go check. Is it okay?
So Jomi and I both get up and we go and investigate. You know, we're just busy eating. Well, we were eating something.
Yeah.
And this bird, whilst it's busy sorting itself out, a ground squirrel comes along and we think, well, okay, it's going to come and investigate and move off. It did not move off.
No.
Well, it did move off, but with...
with the dove.
It came up to the dove, and we knew, Jomi and I, that this was something that this squirrel had done before.
Yeah.
Because it knew exactly what to do. It went straight for the neck of that dove. Couple of swift bites.
Yeah.
The dove was now still.
Yeah.
And it started to pluck the feathers. And at that point, Jomi was like, I need to get something to record this. This is something that I've never seen before, never thought
something
I would see.
Something wild is happening.
And anyway, it eventually then, you know, saw us moving and grabbed the carcass of this bird that it had just killed and dragged it off and started devouring it.
Yeah,
it was something absolutely unique and strange.
I mean, also, just to like put into context, these are not squirrels like squirrels we have at home. This is a small squirrel.
Yeah. No, they're big enough.
Not like U.S. squirrels, like park squirrels.
But they're also
that's like people's
seed eating. You consider them; they gather seeds, right? This one literally dragged a dove down into its little hole, and our guide even said that he'd never seen that before.
I know, crazy, like absolutely crazy. Because our guide there was fantastic, and he's been working there for 5 years.
Seven.
No, five. He started at the end of 2016. And you disagree with me, but anyway. he'd been working there for a significant amount of time.
Oh, no, you're right. The manager had been there for 7 years.
Thank you.
Rochelle.
And,
shout out to Rochelle. She was great.
So he'd been working there for a while anyway and has seen many things and probably a lot of things that many other people have not seen.
Mm.
And we told him about this and he said, no, I've never seen it. I've only read about it. And just... incredible. If anybody has witnessed behavior like this,
good
we would
point.
Love to hear about it. You can either send us an email or a DM on Instagram.
Yeah.
And yeah, we would love to hear of this story because I'm not saying that what we witnessed was unique. Certainly, as Mike has just said,
groundbreaking
we do think that this squirrel had done it before.
but what it was doing.
No, I would like to know about it because
maybe it's just one murderous squirrel.
Well, when I get home, I want to actually have a read about ground squirrels in Estes, and Estes is usually quite good at giving the variety of things that squirrels feed on, and I wonder if birds are in there. But it had started plucking the feathers and everything.
Yeah, no, it was
crazy. Anyway, on that bombshell, I think that's enough for 1 week.
Yeah.
We're in South Africa for another few weeks, and I'm with Mike for another few weeks. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to record another podcast. Maybe we can chat a little bit about Swalu or, I don't know, something else.
Yeah.
I haven't really decided yet. So yeah, we hope you enjoyed the episode, and we hope that you will join us again next time. Thanks, Mike.
Cheers. It was a pleasure.